There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And rolling.
And welcome to Going Off Track.
And I'm glad to be here.
I'm Jonah.
I'm Brad.
And we're in Brad's beautiful apartment. This is the first time I've been over here, and Brad hasn't mentioned how this is the real Lower East Side, which normally he says about six times.
I'm hoping that you stopped and got a CoStar's Bialy, dude.
I did.
That may be the only place that you can get a Bialy. Okay?
And let me tell you something. I've lived in New York for 10 years and never gotten a Bialy before, so this maybe is the real Lower East Side.
Hell yeah, baby.
So, yeah, we're at Brad's place. It's super relaxing. I'm sitting in a very comfortable chair, looking at the skyline of New York.
This is just the way that I do it
now. Feeling good.
It's like, yeah. I didn't make, you know, we're recording now at Pulse Music.
Pulse Music.
Which is, the last podcast was done there. This one was done there.
I want to explain that. Yeah. So we've been doing the podcast at Pulse Music. We record the intro separately at Brad's apartment.
Yeah.
Why?
It's obvious.
Why?
So I don't have to leave.
Yeah. Why? I don't know.
Because I haven't made it to Pulse for these.
You've been to some of them.
I've been to half of them, but neither one of the first two.
Yeah, but so...
I wasn't at this one.
So yeah, so this is at Brad's, but the actual podcast today was done with Stephen Grabowski at Pulse Music. Awesome studio. Shout out to him.
But it does just seem like I'm just sitting here waiting for people to come to me.
Yeah, it's kind of a power move. Because I'm like, Brad, we got to do intros. We can do them at Pulse. And he's like, no, I'll do them at my place.
Yeah, come bring me a Bialy.
Yeah, I did. It's actually great. What else would I be doing? It's a beautiful Friday.
I mean, the first time we did intros here... We drank beers.
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of fun, you know what I'm looking forward to, Brad?
Having some fun?
Having some fun with
in the sun?
With the band that the Goops toured with, Sam I Am. Just want to give them a little plug. Legendary Berkeley band. They're going to be hitting some spots outside the Jersey and Philly areas in June. So come out to that June 9th, Garwood, New Jersey, at Crossroads. Tickets available at Ticketfly. Ticketfly, please email me back. I've been emailing you. June 10th, they're headlining the
Ticketfly listening?
Yeah, Ticketfly loves this podcast. They're headlining. I bought tickets for Riot Fest, then realized one of my really good friends is getting married that weekend, and the tickets are like non-transferable, and it was very expensive. So I'm trying to figure out something else. June 10th, Sam Am's headlining the Neshaminy Creek Brewery Company's 5-year anniversary party. Free show, June 10th, in the Mecca of Croydon, Pennsylvania. And they're heading to Europe in July. So check out their Facebook page for dates at Sam I Am Fancy. My favorite Sam I Am record. Dun, 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 I mean, I do like Clumsy. That's a good one.
I mean, that's what we tour at. That's just sticks with me.
Yeah.
Too much.
I mean, Estray has some serious jams on it.
Yeah.
I
don't. What, there was a record.
You Are Freaking Me Out was the one, I think. That's in between that one is really good. I like that Billy, the early stuff is good.
Yeah. I haven't listened to much new stuff since Clumsy, except the record that came out like maybe like 4 years ago.
Trips. They had this one Trips.
I think that was
came out like
really,
4 or 5 years ago.
I listened to that. It was really, really good.
Yeah. They're a great band. We're going to get those guys on here for sure. We got to get Sergi on.
Yeah.
And Jason. Yeah. We'll get those guys on. But today on the podcast, more importantly, we have Steven.
No. Steve Stevens?
We have
the guitar player?
Steven Steven. It's a band composed of Steve Burns, who you may know as the former host of the children's show Blue's Clues, and Steven Drozd, who's a multi-instrumentalist in the Flaming Lips. And they have a band. They worked together on Steve Burns' debut album, Songs for Decimites, in 2003. And then... they sort of got together, you know, more recently and started this project, which is music for educational music for kids. And we had them come by to talk about the record right before their first show. They're playing a Brooklyn Bowl, and they have a record called Foreverwhere. I believe that you can check it out on Bandcamp. It's out.
Yeah, Foreverwhere.
Foreverwhere. It's out now. And yeah, this was cool. I mean, we talked to what it was like hosting Blue's Clues, about Steve's death hoax. I talked to Steven Drozd about seeing the Flaming Lips open for Candlebox when I was a teenager. Whew. We hit on a lot of different stuff. But yeah, these guys are both super interesting, very accomplished people. And yeah, check out the Steven Steven records. And let's get in this podcast with Steve Burns from Blue's Clues and Steven Drozd from the Flaming Lips. Steven Steven.
It's going on track!
Yeah.
No, I mildly have to pee, but I'm going to use that to keep me awake.
Like Walter Winchell?
Like the Native Americans of old, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's how they would wake up for battle. They would drink a bunch of water, go to bed at whatever time, knowing that it would wake them up. Having to pee would wake them up before dawn. They would get up and...
Now the screaming makes sense.
There you go.
Alleged,
that's a real
alleged
thing I've read about
screaming.
That, yeah.
That's
they
interesting.
They use that as a
I
tool for waking up.
I actually go through a similar thing every night, which is interesting.
And you just pee the bed.
Well, no, not anymore. I did. I had a couple peeing the bed phases. Thanks for unhashing that.
Thank you so much.
But,
like recently?
Well, no.
Thank you.
I did have an odd older one. Like it happened again, older than you're supposed to.
Like what? Like 10 or something?
Yeah, like going into like your 10s, 11s, like middle school. It started again.
It's not uncommon.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it's not
uncommon. I listened to a podcast very about this recently, and the guys were saying the worst part was sleepover parties.
Oh my God, by far.
Yeah.
Question.
By far the worst.
I peed the bed till I was 8.
Can we change the subject?
Yeah.
Because you have to go that bad.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like this.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Those are great glasses.
Thanks, man.
Steven. Now, I always want to ask, do you like the full Steven? Do you go for the Steve? Do you like
these both? Prefer Steven, but I am forever Steve because I was Steve.
Yeah.
And he's Steven. So it's just easier.
Yeah, only 3 people have called me Steve in my life.
Okay.
So.
And how did that start?
Them calling me Steve? I've never felt like a Steve.
Yeah, I've always preferred Steven, but everyone's always called me Steve.
It always felt like that's not really my name. Yeah. Okay, if you were a Robert and someone called you Bob or Rob, you would be like, well, I actually prefer to be called Robert. Just like, you know.
Do you find that when you tell people, please call me Steven, that you feel like you're being the dick then?
Yeah, oh, yeah. They look at me like I'm an asshole. So,
yeah.
Or I shouldn't say that.
No, that's okay.
But Bob Poller from Guy by Voices calls me Steve.
Wow.
Richard Davies from The Moles calls me Steve.
Okay.
And Isaac Brock, sarcastically, from Modest Mouse,
calls me Steve.
Yeah, because he knows it bothers me, so.
Anybody from high school, from like college down, calls me Steve, but anyone else, it's Steven. And it always trips my wife up when they show up and they're like, Steve, and she's like,
Yeah, I was never, like in high school, no one ever called me Steve. It was always Steven, so.
I prefer Steven, too.
Yeah.
Double the syllable.
How did you two Stevens meet?
Way back Steve in the midst of the fall of 2001.
You were at the Steve convention as well?
Well, I was at the Steven convention.
See, it was before high school.
The opposing Steve convention on the other side. Yeah. See, I do imagine like the Steven convention with like crushed velvet, like a certain regality to the Steven one. And then I imagine the Steve one with like
sawdust.
Yeah, no, it's just kind of like
the Miller Lite.
Yeah, like braided belts.
I'm thinking the nunchucks guy from Ghost World. He's like a Steve, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Maybe some Ed Hardy shirts over there. I don't know.
Either a weightlifter or a gay hairdresser.
Steven is your first name, though, right, for both of you?
Yeah, he's Stephen Michael Burns. I'm Stephen Gregory Drozd. So we both have kind of Catholic Stephen names.
See, I'm a bit of a poser then because my first name is Jeffrey, but I go by Stephen and have since birth.
You have no claim.
No
or
claim.
Or right. To any preference
Is he automatically exempt? Do you feel like he's sold out the name because he willingly went against it?
I don't think he's selling out. I think he's trying to co-opt it.
And my mother allegedly said it's because she dated a guy whose middle name was Steven, and she thought that was cool and kind of didn't give my dad the option.
Oh,
so in a way, that's kind of cool.
That's pretty weird, actually.
Kind of weird. Yeah,
that's weird.
It seems like the whole thing's founded on a negative kind of impulse. Yeah, but yeah,
that's kind of like
okay though.
Wait,
I think you just defined my family. Yeah,
hey,
be our business card.
Wait, I do want to hear about that one. Wait,
no.
No? Mm-mm. Okay. All right. That's fine.
We got other Stevens here, man. We got things to do.
Jonah, do you ever get called Steven?
Never.
Just doesn't happen?
Never. It's never happened.
Not once.
Not once.
I don't believe that. Not for a second. That you know. Did you guys, I saw that you actually retweeted it, but the Colbert segment...
Well, he tweeted it. I retweeted it.
About like we need more good Stevens. Yeah,
Steven from Stephen Bannon and Stephen Miller and company.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that, and I thought I had a running chance of being included because he mentioned Blue's Clues a couple times on Colbert Report.
Oh,
so I was like, oh, what's going to happen? It's going to happen. Damn,
so close.
You know, how cool would it be if Colbert included me in one of the good Steves? That would have been so great.
Yeah, completely,
totally
overlooked.
Well, maybe in good Steven news for you guys.
Don't give up yet, man. Yeah. I mean, he's a big Lips fan. I'll be there next week. I'll tell him about the good Steven.
Are you going to be on next week?
We can't announce it yet, but we're on Thursday of next week. So, yeah.
Right on.
Are we on a podcast right now? Didn't you just announce it?
No, this
is
a
lie. Yeah, just
or ever.
It will have happened by then.
Yeah, we can't announce it till the day before, I think. So, we're playing Colbert on Thursday. So
that'll be super fun.
And you know what's great about him? Because he always does like skits with Wayne and stuff, and they're like buddies. But every time we've done anything with him, at some point he comes over really quick and goes, "Hey, Steven, how you doing, buddy?" I'm like, "Great." He's like, "Okay, I'll see you later." He does that every time I see him. We did the Colbcella thing on the crazy boat a couple years ago, mm-hmm. with his little mini festival that he did. He was running around doing like a million things. And at some point I was like sitting in this little director's chair thing, just kind of watching all the insanity. He came over, he's like, "Hey, Steven, how you doing?" I'm like, "Pretty good." He's like, "Okay, good, I'm busy. Good to see you, man." I'm like, "Ah, what a nice guy, you know? He's such a sweet guy."
I bumped into him literally while I was buying hiking boots in New Jersey.
Where in New Jersey?
Rutherford, does that sound right?
Sounds right.
Yeah, and I was buying hiking boots, and I bumped into him. And I was like, oh.
Gore-Tex? Went, Gore-Tex?
My hero.
That was it.
He's a hero, man.
What? How much have you wanted to say something? Like, what? I never know what to do in situations like that. Like, there are very few situations where I run into somebody that I admire, I know who they are, and I actually want to be like, I
you've
feel like I have something important enough to say to spark a conversation.
Like, you've run into like Springsteen, like for real.
I actually like, it's separate. That guy like got introduced to me. It's a totally different story. So like I had a right to it.
I'm talking
about like I saw Sasha Cohen randomly in Hawaii with his family.
I would.
And he was at this little banana stand. He was with his kids. He's doing this thing. I was like, you know what? Like, fuck it. I don't have anything to say to this guy. Not anything real or important, and let him go on with his
thing. Dude, I'm with you, man.
That's not to say something.
I totally agree. I'm absolutely with you.
So what's the time to say something? Like when they're in a working capacity? Their working venue?
And if there's some way that you can naturally affiliate. Bjork spilled a beer on me in Reykjavik.
Holy shit. You we have that in common.
Yeah.
I was with my friend Gumi Thor in Reykjavik, and she spilled beer on me. And I had every reason to talk to her. We'd actually even heard that her kid was a Blues Clues fan, and I couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it?
I had every reason to go talk to her, like you were saying. Like, I had every excuse and reason.
Maybe she even pulled that, like, 80s movie thing where she intentionally spilled the beer on you to start.
She was like a strange little whirling dervish,
like,
as you can imagine.
Excuse me.
I mean, you're like, so I thought I was looking at a homeless person, but it was actually a Bjork. It was weird.
I was just truly very starstruck at that moment. And I don't usually get starstruck.
Is she just followed by like light in Iceland? I imagine her just like.
It was very not a big deal, and it was not a very big club, or it was not glamorous at all.
That's cool.
You remember something crazy? The exact same thing happened to me here in New York. Bjork drunkenly fell on me.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Bjork, I think it's time to we need to stage an intervention.
She's really small. It probably doesn't take much.
It was at a small. Yeah. Stop what? I had one.
No, you.
My
you
name
guys,
is Bjork, and I am for having she to would, be drinking.
She would kick all of our asses at the same time.
Yeah, without blinking.
Rob, she's terrifying. Rob Hayden, tour managed her for
she's
2 years. Like, do
right.
not mess with her.
Really?
Tough she reputation?
Will, yeah.
I love her shows, man. Yeah. I've seen her a bunch. She's so phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's man. Cool. I couldn't talk to her. I was just like, oh.
Yeah.
No. I mean, how do you guys sort of deal? Because I imagine both of you kind of get recognized pretty regularly.
No one recognizes me.
Really?
Are you kidding me? I look more like Paul Schaefer than I do like Steve from Blue's Clues.
I heard you get Moby from time to time.
Sometimes I'm really skinny. Like sometimes I work out a lot and I get really in shape. And
so then, in like a good month, you get a Moby?
Yeah, I do. I do actually. That happens more. People think I'm the dude from the bass player from OK Go. I get that. I've never gotten Paul Schaefer, but I feel like I'm on my way.
Speaking of a guy, I pissed next to Paul Schaefer once.
Really? How was that? Do I look like him?
Can you guys go pee together? You're fabulous. You're great. You're fabulous. I love the way you pee. It's fabulous. You're great.
Does he play along like when you're playing on the show?
He has before, not every time. But
okay.
The first time the lips were on Letterman was like 95 when we did She Don't Use Jelly, that song. And Schaefer wanted to play, and people were like, "You can't play." I'm like, "No, he's gonna play with the Flaming Lips. He's gonna this hokey keyboard organ part." I'm like, "Yes."
Man,
afterwards, he's like,
play,
"You guys right? are, man, you're fantastic. I love it. I love the whole chord change." Like, yeah, it's D to C to G, whatever, you know. And then 10 years later on, again, we play whatever we played. Do you realize? Like, you guys are fabulous. I love you. I love what you do. You guys are a great town. And then we've done it like 5 times since then. He says the same exact thing every time. You guys are fabulous. I love you.
He's apparently the first person to accidentally say fuck on TV. One of the first people, like he said it on SNL years and years ago.
Oops.
Really? And just one of those random little bits where. He was hosting because he used to be the band leader, I think.
He was, yeah.
I think it was Howard Shore than him, I think.
Yeah, and then he also did the bit where Bill Murray was the lounge singer. Paul Schaefer was the piano player. Bill Murray was the lounge singer. So.
And he's Artie Fufkin.
What's that?
And he's Artie Fufkin.
He's Artie Fufkin. Yeah.
I'm like sort of personally offended by the fact that you can't say the word fuck on TV. It actually bothers me.
Now it just depends on the channel you're watching.
You know what it is? It's like when I'm flipping around, right? And I'll go 3 channels in a row from, like, let's say a reality show about plastic surgery where I'm literally watching like a human body get mutilated.
Mm-hmm.
And not even for like a good reason.
Talking Botched. You watch Botched?
I'm talking flipping. I don't watch those things. I'm in a flipping capacity for this hypothetical. And then, like, the next one, you know, we'll see, like, Rambo. You know, I'm just watching, like, people get their brains blown out from Point Blank Range and things like that.
Their brains blown out.
Their brains blown out.
That's David Blaine's next bit. He's going to have a Blaine.
Blaine's blown
and then,
out.
Like, and then the next
but it's
broing
out.
I'll see something really, really innocent and the word, like, you know, dick or shit. Or just something really, really simple being... What is that double standard?
What is the show we're doing
That's
here?
That's America.
What is this podcast, guys?
Oh, it's called
it's
Going,
called
off,
going
track.
Off Track.
Okay.
But I was actually curious about... where do you live?
I live in Oklahoma City. And Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
You live in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So do you guys mostly do the Pro Tools?
It's about time I came up here to work with him. He came to Oklahoma City like 10 times.
Yeah, there's a lot, you know, but there's a lot of really cute girls in Oklahoma City.
Really?
Midwest.
That's really why I came there.
Well, it was actually part of it at one point. But, Steven's got a family and like, I've got a lot more flexibility in terms of how I can travel and go places, so it was kind of out of respect for that, you know, and also we worked with this guy in Oklahoma, Trent Bell. He's really good, really quick engineer, and it just seemed that we had the resources there, so we would always record down there.
Gotcha.
And it's so much cheaper, and we have more time to do stuff,
and it is a lot cheaper.
If we were going to do like a full-on recording studio here, it would be so much more expensive. But,
and he just had kids. Yeah. It just didn't make sense to ask.
At that time, they were very, very children. So,
you know.
And I'm gone so much with the Flaming Lips that I didn't want to leave unless I absolutely had to. So that's how the Oklahoma City thing evolved.
Gotcha.
But the idea that we're playing the first show here at Brooklyn Bowl makes perfect sense to me. That makes more sense than our first show being in Oklahoma somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but...
Yeah. I agree.
And what's the wellspring of the song? Like, who comes up with what? someone had.
Always want to do some musical thing that I'm trying to do, and he wants to do some thematic, lyrical, educational thing, emotional thing that he wants to get across. We find the meeting place for those two things to come together.
Yeah, and it's also
it's a generalization, but that's kind of it, you know. Really.
I mean, he's kind of a prolific dude, you know. And so I'm like, what do you got? He's like, I got this nugget that I've been chewing on for 6 hours.
That those fun lips don't want. So
well, some of those, yeah.
Check this out. OK Toilet Bowl was like one of those songs that I had for a while that I would kind of play it every once in a while for the guys in the band. It was always kind of like, that's no. And I play for you, you're like, I know exactly what's going to happen on this one. And then boom. 6 hours later, we had
a song about defecating, but
children.
But there's also been times where I mean, like there was a song. We have a song on the record about bullying. Where I was like, I want to do a song about me being bullied when I was in first grade. You know,
and that's what that started with your idea. That
and then Stephen was like, "Well, here's some very wimpy Morrissey chords for you, I've got for you, and that."
Kind of goes both ways, You said that you wanted to make a song that expressed those emotions and those feelings, and so we built the musical part of the song from the idea of the lyrics, and that's kind of a fun way to work too. So,
And actually, I think that's more the way it happens. Then there was a time where I was like, "Let's write a song about this crazy octopus," and you were like, "This is like a crazy octopus psychedelic octopus riff," you know? Yeah.
That's true.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's the story about first grade?
Oh well. I went to school, first grade, first day of school, dressed perfectly, head to toe, as Mork from Ork. And with suspenders and the buttons.
You see what I'm dealing with here? I mean, come on.
That's a very tight shirt, too.
Yeah, and I got my ass kicked, you know, like immediately. And I was also the first person on the bus. So I would sit in the best seat, which to me was the back seat on the left facing the back. And, the second guy I got on the bus was, of course, named Brock, and he was a bully.
No way.
And he had...
That's too perfect.
That's not to say all Brocks are bullies.
He had every other seat to choose from, including another back seat, but he wanted mine, and the injustice of that still upsets me. And so we would fight, because I would never, like, you know what I mean? Like, I would always kind of stand up for myself-ish, you know, and we would fight, but he would always win, because I was, like, this big, you know?
Shazbot.
Yeah, you sure stand up totally, for yourself.
Yeah, that's good, though.
But that's not the point of the point of the song. The point of the song gets kind of Cool Hand Luke because he says, I know you think you just knocked me down, but I'm still standing, you know, and I won't let you change who I am. And that's the point of the song because, like, I remember when I was getting bullied a lot, I was starting to get mean to other kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then my dad kind of stepped in and said, you can't let that change, like, legitimately who you are, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of that's what he said, but that's how I interpret it now. So, yeah, and that's, you know, you can't do that. And then in the song we ask the bully, you know, do you know how it feels? Because I think you do. And that's always the case, right? You know, the bully is often, that's a learned behavior, usually.
Well, yeah, whether it's their older brother or their dad or another older kid.
Yeah.
That's so true,
I'm curious about your thoughts, and I recently just saw a clip of actually Mr. Rogers speaking at a Senate hearing.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, you saw it.
So, oh, sure. Yeah.
So, you know, the things he was touching on with that, the emotional responses of kids, the things that need to be guided in them, and the things, you know, when he would ask those baiting questions to kids and the things to keep them along and to make sure that they were like... being able to view and see the emotional response in a situation, not only in themselves, but other people. Is that, I mean, you worked obviously in that field for so long. I was curious about your thoughts of like childhood development and how the songs connect to it. And that specifically, if, 'cause the song you're talking about sounds like it's important to you that kids learn the same kind of emotional response you do.
Well, there's a lot there. It's a good question. I mean, first of all, Fred Rogers, you know, was the boss. Like, he was the avatar of the Buddha. Like, there's never been anything like him before or since, and he was the real deal.
Yeah.
And Blue's Clues, by the way, is based on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Is that right?
Sort of note for note. You know, like, the reason I wore the same shirt every day is because he did the sweater. The way he talked to the camera was amazing. Mm-hmm. And he would take an idea in the show and then take it into an imaginative realm with the trolley. And we would do like a skidoo to do the same thing. Like we basically worshipped that show.
Sure.
And he said something that was really important to me when I was a children's television show host. He said that, and I think this is to your question, anything that comes out of the television in the house is automatically a sanctioned thing and a part of the parents' caregiving, because the kids look at it like an appliance, like the oven. Anything comes out of the oven is cool because mom and dad made it. Anything that comes out of the fridge is fine because it's safe because mom and dad made that too. And kids sort of see the television in the same way. So I think that puts a tremendous amount of importance on what we're doing.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of this record, I kind of didn't focus it that way. Like, I wasn't thinking everything's got to be perfect and I have to know exactly what I'm saying and I have to make sure everything is 100% correct.
But you did, for the most part, do that exact thing.
It's in my bones. It's in my bones.
You did that exact thing. You put so much thought in some of those lyrics. It's amazing, I think. So.
But the criteria for us was always, like, that song, the song about me being bullied. I could have written that song in a very different way, but I wrote it in a way that I made sure moved me. You know what I mean? And that was always the criteria when we were making this record. If we wrote a funny song, it had to make us laugh.
Sure.
If we wrote a sad song, it had to make us tear up or whatever, you know?
Is it true that my kids are big fans of Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood?
Yeah, Angela made that. Yeah.
Yeah, from Blue's Clues.
She's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, she invented Blue's Clues and she did that. And she's real good at what she does.
How old are your children?
Mine, they're going to be 6.
Yeah. Okay.
And they
would love every song on the Steven record.
Then they shall be played for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started on the record. My son was 2 and my daughter wasn't born yet when we started, actually.
Oh, wow.
Which is pretty crazy. And they're 11 and 9 now, so they have grown up on these songs.
Ah, oh, so great.
To them, it's like the Beatles or Led Zeppelin or the Flames or whatever. It's just part of their musical library, you know. So.
That's a very good list of bands to include us in. I'm happy with that.
That's kind of how they, you know.
We've had Greg from the Bouncing Souls on, and he has he and his wife do something for kids called Playdate. Mm-hmm. And they tour around, and it's kind of funny because he talks about now how the audience has not changed. Except it's their children come with their parents. Mm. And that's the only difference between that and like a Bouncing Souls show. Yeah, do you find that? Like, have you played this out?
No.
We haven't played the show yet.
Not yet. Okay.
We played a couple of the songs for the first time ever today.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right on.
How'd it go?
That's why we look completely blown out right now.
I mean, it's scary. You know what I mean? It's a little scary, like, because for me, it's a little freaky because I had to summon a part of me that I've not summoned in 20 years, you know, like to sort of to do it. And also I think there's kind of like a personal expectation. There's like the stakes are kind of high. It's like, you know, I am entertaining for kids again, you know? Mm. So there's a little personal pressure you put on, but it was a lot of fun. And you
sounds
know,
like what you brought set a you pretty back? High standard for yourself too.
Well, no, I mean, you know, it's like, what happened to the Blues Clues guy? Is he dead? No, he's alive and he's singing the song. It better be good.
Right. Jen and I saw Christmas on Mars. We went to one of the theaters that was set up with speakers.
I don't want to talk about that.
I saw you guys tour with Candlebox.
Did you really? Wow. Where'd you see us?
Cleveland State University.
Oh my God, that tour was hellish.
Had a lot of Christmas lights on your gear, and I thought that was like amazing.
Yeah,
that's where it started with those guys, I think.
We had to do something. Yeah. Opening for Candlebox was, man, that was...
What record was that?
Klaus Takes Metallic. No, it was before Klaus Takes Metallic. It was Transmission from the Satellite Heart.
That's such a good record.
Yeah.
That was the tour we did right before we worked on Klaus, so it was fall of 94, fall and winter.
Yeah.
What was the Candlebox crowd?
Here's the thing, is the tour before that was Lollapalooza, second stage, but it was every day Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, the Boredoms, the Breeders, L7, Guided by Voices, the Beastie Boys. I mean, like, every fucking great band at that time, Palace Brothers, all the great bands.
Wow.
And then the next tour was opening for Candlebox.
3 months.
And we went from, like, young rock star wanting to be people to like now we're just old and really miserable, and we came home and my girlfriend, now my wife, was like, wow, you aged like 5 years in the last 3 months.
Yes, they would play Far Behind and then they would go into this like Voodoo Child
and they go into Voodoo Child and just met. Oh,
did they do the same set every night?
No, they would mix it up a little bit.
Mix it up a bit.
But it always ended with the last two hit. The two big hits were always the last two songs, you know.
So, yeah.
I think they still play.
Every song sounded the same, though. It was like, I was really
into them at that point in my life.
Your ears hadn't been around that long.
Clearly, you've grown out of it. Or you wouldn't be doing this right now.
I've grown out of it.
No shame, bro.
Yeah.
No shame in the box.
Dude, you get a gateway. It's good. Yeah. It works. I think Priest Driven Ambulance, that was when I was in college.
That was the first one I heard before I joined the group.
They brought that record in. I remember listening. We're like, this is something.
Yeah. It blew my mind.
I saw Candlebox on the reverse tour for you guys.
Not that
which
one.
I saw them open for Rush.
Oh,
where
my God.
The Rush fans were not too stoked about.
I have a hard time thinking of a concert I'd like to go to less than Candlebox opening for Rush.
Yeah, that sounds like hell. Yeah.
Fun.
I've seen Rush a few times, and it's always like, you know what? I wish I could have seen him in 1981, not 2003, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, because they can still play, but it's not the same thing.
I saw him in the 80s, and it was great because we were all in high school, and it felt like it was just weird because all. You know, we were like Northern DC kids, and it was all Minor Threat and Misfits and everything.
So
we'd missed that by a few years, but then we all liked Rush. And someone said, someone wrote somewhere on the interwebs, what's your Rush line in the sand? And I thought that was really funny. Like, what were you never, where do you stop? And I was like, well,
okay, stop. Don't, before you say it, let's say it at the same time and see if it jibes.
Okay. God, right.
It's not going to jibe.
I'll give you a 1, 2, 3.
Okay. One, two, three. Grace under pressure.
Why was he?
Here's difference. Okay.
Yeah. A couple years.
I tried, yeah.
A couple years. That's pretty good. Grace is not pretty good, you know.
And then I saw him on Power Windows Tour. Was actually the first time I saw him.
That's a good.
In
that's
Dallas. Great. But it was already, for me, I was 17. I was in high school, but it was already.
Steve. He's falling asleep. Steve.
But it was already too, like, it was just too much bad synthesizer stuff.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's true.
Yeah. So. Like Fridman saw on the Signals tour in Buffalo. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
What's that song that's written in a time signature that doesn't exist?
It's just 5'8.
I went back to the 30-year anniversary tour with some friends. We kind of bonded at work over Rush, and we went back, and it was terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And because right in the middle, Getty said, the worst thing I've ever heard a singer say. He went, we'd like to play some cover songs with your permission. And without blinking, my friends and I went, you don't have it. You don't have it at all.
Yeah.
Like, we retract everything we've done. But it was a Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah.
And instead of a stack of bass amps, he had a washer and dryer.
Why? That pissed me off. I saw that tour.
And somebody periodically would come out and take the clothes out
of the dryer.
That didn't bother me so much. I kind of backed that a little bit.
That's so dumb.
I'm embarrassed. That's one of the best things we've ever heard about that band.
It's
rough.
Yeah. That was my first concert, guys.
Rush?
Not that one. It was the Roll the Bones tour.
Were they wrapped?
Was that with Primus?
No. Mr.
going to hell quickly.
Mr. Big opened
up. We've
talked about Rush for
Big,
too long. They were a band that formed my whole DNA, but I don't want to talk about Rush anymore. Gotcha.
Steven and I don't disagree that often about music. We actually have a lot of musical affiliation, but
that's
something
we don't agree on.
ELO and Rush, leave me out.
You have a Rush hard line.
You guys.
And man, moving pictures when I was in sixth grade, it changed my life, man. That's just all there is to it. So.
And I remember when I worked at Alternative Press, I got a solo record that you had done that you guys had helped collaborate on. Is that?
Yeah, well, it was his record. I helped him on some songs. Yeah.
Gotcha. And had you guys kind of stayed in touch this whole time?
Well, that's how it started, yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's how we met. Yeah. We met when I knew a guy who knew a guy who knew Dave Fridman, who produced Flaming Lips, who produced the Soft Bulletin, which was the record that
his first record was in a Priest's Ambulance, so that was Dave Fridman's first record. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
the big change, you know, with the group.
That record kind of rewired my brain, you know.
Soft Bulletin.
Yeah, I lost my shit when I heard that record.
It's one of my. Not because you're here, but one of my top 10 favorite records.
It is my favorite record, and And so I was like screwing around with Pro Tools at the time, and I was as big a fan of Dave Fridman as I was of Stephen Jones and Wayne Coyne.
He was in Mercury Rev too.
Whoever made this sound this way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Fridman's like, he's just in his own league. He just exists alone by himself, you know?
So I shot him a 4-song CD or whatever, and he's confessed that he only listened to it because he thought it was going to be so awful.
Were you still doing the show at this time, or this is post?
I think I was still maybe on it a little bit. I don't even
know. You were in the process of leaving at that time. that. Yeah. Exactly at that time.
And he's like, so what do you want to do? You want to work on a couple of these songs? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, Stephen Droz is up here working on a new record. Do you want, maybe you could put like some string parts or drums on or whatever. And I was like,
I was already in my car at that point. Like,
wow. Did you try to play it cool? Like, yeah, maybe it might be cool.
I did, but I wasn't cool at all. I was like,
we hit it off pretty quick.
And we just became fast friends, literally. Like, you know, we just really got along from the beginning. Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing you didn't talk about Rush at the beginning.
No, I think we more
actually,
bonded.
Here's the thing. And he won't remember this, but I remember like it was yesterday.
You mean the phone
call? We had a phone call about a week before you came.
I remember the whole thing.
And we just started spitballing. Here's a group I like. Do you like this group? We agreed on Journey, but we did not agree on Yes.
We did not agree. But we agreed on Unforgettable Fire.
That was our favorite U2 record. We agreed on that.
And we had the same favorite song on that record.
Yeah.
Which is Elvis weird.
Preston America.
Yeah. I remember all that, dude. Come on.
All right.
Don't front.
That's quality.
Okay. Yeah, so it was like, but yeah, what was Air Supply?
We both kind of liked Air Supply. Yeah.
Who was
like,
which way on Yes?
I don't like Yes.
I'm like Yes.
Yes, no Rush. All right, I'm seeing a theme.
If gun to my head, die.
You're missing out. You're missing out, dude. You're missing out.
I
Harvest Sunrise, missing out.
I appreciate their powers, but I think they use their powers for evil. Tom Sawyer's badass song. And the riff is like, that's a badass.
It's one of my least favorite ones. So.
I know. And every Rush fan feels the same because Rush fans like Rush.
I'm like no one at the bridge off Caress of Steel. I go deep, man.
Caress of Steel is great. Bastille Day, it's a great record.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah.
I know.
I know you've talked about this.
Hold on. What about Yes, though? Where do you go with Yes?
Oh, I'm pro Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never listened to him, really.
Vocal solos and these crazy things, they're fun, man.
Sure.
It's just epic and fun.
Yeah, it's epic. I'll give you that. I think
Tales from Topographic Oceans, like, that gave them just a bad, like, okay, this band is just so full of shit.
That was the over-the-top.
That's what did it.
That was
if they
had
made that record, they probably wouldn't be perceived in the way they're perceived because of that record.
I think their covers are kind of cool.
Jump the Shark.
They definitely jumped the shark, yeah. But that was my first concert ever, was them on the 90125 tour in 1984.
Oh, nice.
And I think the band Berlin were supposed to open up, but Berlin canceled, so they showed Warner Brothers cartoons for like an hour. And then Yes came out with this fucking laser show that was like, it opened with Changes off 90125. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do, that song.
Was that in Texas or Oklahoma?
It was in Houston, Texas. Yeah, I was in ninth grade. It just... That was it.
You gotta be careful with Warner Brothers cartoons, though. I just got a whole bunch for my kids and got them out of the children's section of the library. And I knew to look because I've made this mistake. It said not for children.
Yeah, so they're like blatantly racist, strange.
Blatantly racist. And I went to the library and I said, you know, this is in the kids section. They went, yeah, it's Bugs Bunny. I went, fine print, pointing.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we had no idea because I have all of the.
Yeah, it's got a Japanese guy that's depicted as a Japanese. Yeah,
it's pretty bad.
The Uncensored.
Tom and Jerry, too.
Oh, yeah. I love all the Uncensored Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, they're like crazy.
Man, Heckle and Jekyll is pretty bad, too.
I think it started out as bad.
I love Heckle and Jekyll.
What do these guys symbolize?
That's why I'm so racist, because I watched Heckle and Jekyll as a kid. That's what happened. Damn.
So you had a death hoax, Steve, right, for a long time.
I think
time.
I still do, dude.
Oh, it's still going?
I think so, yeah.
First off, I was impressed by having one pre-social media. It's impressive.
Well, no, it's not unprecedented. There's Mikey with the Pop Rocks.
No, I said impressive, not unprecedented.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah.
But it was cool that you did that. But one thing I found interesting when you were saying it was how after a certain amount of time, you found it to be like... There was like a cultural preference.
It seems
where
that
like
way.
People...
I feel that
like,
way.
The narrative was written so long that you really think like...
It seems like people would prefer it. Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, like, why? It does start to feel a little bit like, you know, actually, Steve Burns is alive. No, he's not. No, he must be dead. I mean, and I don't know. I'm just going to start saying that it's true. Because it is true, guys.
That could be
We're all dead.
I love it.
There are alternate facts, you know, so.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
It's you and McCartney, and...
That's right.
Yeah, Paul McCartney is a good one.
He's been dead since 66. It's crazy, I know.
But no one believes that. And it's also partially...
What's the Avril Lavigne
one? I never knew the Avril Lavigne one.
Wait, she's
she married, the, she guy just from married the dude from Nickelback. Yeah, that's not.
That's what we
that
know.
It's not, no,
that's like, the same.
It's close.
There's a thing that's that not her if you look at all these photos.
Oh, right.
That's really?
Yeah, okay, I don't know. Huh?
Yeah, you can look
but she
up.
Was manufactured anyway.
I think she's Oliver most definitely Stone a did a documentary about the Avril Lavigne one.
No, I'm I left a children's television show and just dropped off the face of the earth. And I mean, I think that had a lot to do with it. And I was not really interested in being a public figure at all after I left that show. So I think it was just kind of like a, you know, and so, but I mean, but the rumors were there while I was on the show.
So really?
Yeah.
Were you getting a lot of interview requests and whatnot directly after the show about it?
About like, being dead? About
yeah,
the
like,
no.
Were people like, can you speak on your death?
No. No. I mean, though, I did go on the Rosie O'Donnell show once at Nickelodeon's request.
Oh, really?
Just because kids were, like, upset. Kids were like, I already died. And I was like, still here.
Don't want to talk to you anymore.
What were you sort of doing after the show ended? Were you just working mostly on music stuff, just lying low?
I was festering.
Yeah?
Festering and moldering.
Were you living out here then?
Yeah. No, I mean, I've always been a voiceover guy. We, you know, since even while I was on Blue's Clues, that was always my career. You know, like Blue's Clues in a way was the anomaly, and that's what I've always been doing for the last 20 years. You know, it's always been my gig.
You know, what are some?
Can you give us an example of something?
They say you're not supposed to do that, so
but just for us,
I love voiceovers, and yeah. I think it's like when. Probably, I think it's the hardest thing to break into.
Oh, to break into, yeah.
Yeah, sure. And my younger brother is learning disabled, and he loves animation. He's like, I don't know, 35, but all he watches are cartoons, and he memorizes everybody's names.
Yeah.
Who does all the voices.
I don't do cartoon stuff.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, I'm much more of like a commercial guy. Mm-hmm. Like, if you hear someone who sounds like the Blue's Clues guy trying to sell you, like, insurance or a car or something, it's probably me.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Steven, you just heard Vanessa in Despicable Me 2?
Yes. Yeah, I had no idea that Vanessa was
one line. It's so far into the movie, I haven't made it that far.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not as good as the first one, but it's still okay.
Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. Just don't do Minions, man.
Don't.
Oh, Lord.
High five on that one, man.
Oh, Lord, it's so bad.
I luckily previewed that before my children got to see it, and they were like, can we watch it?
My kids, too. My
son
was like,
doesn't work on the iTunes. Sorry.
My son was like, I'm getting too old for this crap.
When does their so I have a 1-year-old. When does their attention span pick up to the point that they can actually watch a full movie with you?
A full movie?
Well, depends on you, not your child.
Yeah, you got.
I feel like I don't know if I have that attention span anymore.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah. Show them Tommy the Who movie when they're 4 and see what happens after that.
Yeah, that's okay. Good. Or Gothic. If you're gonna do Ken Russell, there's a lot of different
Kurosawa.
Yeah, I'd say a little Kurosawa
right now.
Yeah. Start him off on that
Hidden Fortress. Okay. That way, when they watch Star Wars, they know it's bullshit.
Right. They know it's bullshit.
Yeah. These are great tips, fellas.
It's all allegory. You know what? This, the thing. The children's program, and the thing that was the gateway for my kids was Yo Gabba Gabba.
Mm. Oh yeah, my kids love that as well. Yeah.
To the point where we like paid to do the meet and greet with one time I met DJ
we did that
Lance.
Too. Yeah, DJ Lance. Yeah. What's funny about him is he's best old friends with my brother-in-law. Totally random.
That is weird.
He grew up in St. Louis, Missouri. My wife's sister, they're from Tulsa, but my wife's sister moved to St. Louis in the early 90s. Married a guy who's best friends with DJ Lance. They were like punk rockers in the 80s together.
Holy crap. Because he used to work at Amoeba in LA, I think.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a sweetheart.
Yeah, they finally kicked things open. You know what I mean? In the 90s, there was this whole initiative to make children's television so considered and educational and focused. And Blue's Clues was part of that. You know, and I was always a proponent on Blue's Clues for like, can we be cool too? Like, there's no reason why we can't be cool, but. It was very taboo to be cool on kids' TV. It was about honoring the children's attention span and talk only to what they can understand and all those things. Hmm. And Yo Gabba Gabba was like, no, let's do this.
Here's a giant boombox.
And it totally
worked. MGMT, yeah.
We already have these costumes from our shows. Let's right. go ahead and do this. Well, I remember growing up as I'm not too much older than you, but you know, remember for cool. Sesame Street, you knew you liked, but Electric Company, like was cool.
That was
cool.
Was Electric Company was super cool.
Super cool. And funny.
It still is, actually.
I wholeheartedly agree.
In Space Rock. That's a
very Electric Company.
From Electric Company somehow in the back of my brain. I stole that from Electric Company. Yeah.
I was showing my kids, I found an old copy of Free to Be You and Me, because I have the audio of it, and they kept listening to it in the car, and so I found, it doesn't exist, old Marlo Thomas thing, and some of the dancers from Electric Company are in that, and my kids love to dance. They're like, who's that girl? Who's that girl? And I was like, well, oddly enough, they're on this show. What is this?
Yeah.
And,
you know,
and it kind of helps
out. You're a cool dad, man.
No,
you're a cool dad.
No.
I like the aesthetic on Electric Company, too, the early kind of blue screen stuff and the early kind of weird Atari graphic-y kind of stuff. Really neat. Yeah.
How they play. And that's where I learned about Spider-Man.
Oh, boy, a really bad Spider-Man, though. I even knew then that, like, that's not a cool enough Spider-Man.
Mm.
Spider-Man should be cooler than this guy.
Spidey-Man.
Yeah, he was kind of wimpy. And
nobody knows who he is. Yeah.
Nobody knows who you are.
Yep. There you go. My kids came home singing the Spider-Man theme song from school, and it was something like, I can't remember, but it was something about being good readers. And their teachers were singing to them, so it was like, great readers, we are reading. They're doing the whole thing. And how'd you guys learn the... I don't need to explain this. It's not going to help you at all.
Go with it.
In the slightest. Yeah. You got it. I back it. Totally.
How do you guys play the situation currently? I know you're both politically oriented to the point that you're interested in tweet about it and things like that.
I have to stop. I seem like a
jackass. I don't know that we want to get him going.
No. It's honestly been...
He's just going
to... It's been something that's interesting to me because So I heard some people recently talk a little smack about Lady Gaga for saying nothing at the Super Bowl performance.
She sang a Woody Guthrie
song.
And
I'm like, exactly. You sang a Woody Guthrie song. You also performed in this way in the most giant stage, and it seemed like an effective message to me.
I got a message from her, yeah.
The one thing I thought about was how, like, are you converting Lady Gaga fans? Lady Gaga fans are already... people who would probably side with somebody who's anti-Trump. I get the same impression for somebody who's a Flaming Lips fan. Normally would be somebody who's already on that team. And I wonder sometimes, and I suffer from the same thing. I go into Twitter wormholes all the time. I see some information, I wake up and I read it, and it sets me on this thing that I don't want to be on. And this voice I have on Twitter, I feel like can do something. But even though I feel like I'm maybe screaming into a vacuum a little bit, like, do you think that by doing it, we're actually, like, doing anything?
That's a great question. I guess for me personally, I keep trying to find some way that I can express my frustration and rage and everything and have it be unique to me. So it's entertaining, but also letting you know what's going on. I haven't found that yet. I just come across like a blowhard, I think. So it's kind of a tough... Like, I read Patton Oswalt's tweets about Trump, and they make me laugh, and I completely agree with them.
Right.
I don't know if it's giving any more information as to what's going on. And I try to read as much National Review as I do, you know, New York Times or Washington Post or whatever, just to see what other people are thinking. But I feel like I'm just frustrated because I don't think it's making a difference, because I think 99% of the people that read my tweets are people that already feel that way anyway.
So. Yeah.
Or if anything, I lose a couple of fans because, like, oh, there's the douchebag musician artist that wants to pontificate about politics. It's like, okay, so artists and musicians shouldn't do that? Or,
well, I
but
mean,
you're whatever your occupation is, you're free to. You know, to spout your, you know what I mean? It's
just
a weird, like, we're not allowed to do that. And
it's kind of a double standard that went out the window, too, when we hired a reality reality star.
Yeah, Hollywood
real estate
liberals,
mogul,
like,
as our president.
It's the president.
I think everybody can
all
talk now, you know, like an artist, a musician. I mean, we literally Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor of our largest state in the country.
And ran into
like the idea
ground
that you can't say something about politics is absurd.
It's enraging,
it's totally
in mind.
Absurd.
So
remember
I
that Reagan guy?
Up,
I think he did some art. Didn't he do art before?
I've kind of given up the fact that people think he's a man of the people for the coal miners of West Virginia. It's like, he does not.
Well, it's just silly. Yeah,
insane.
The thing I'm starting to think, though, and I think we've both potentially fallen victim to it, is I think it's intentionally, the discourse has intentionally gone to Twitter. He does it on purpose.
Yeah.
He does it so people like you and I, who maybe actually could make some real, anybody here could actually make some real impact in different ways. I think he wants the conversation there where you are screaming into a vacuum, but yeah. you're actually interacting with other people. Other people are seeing what you're saying. So it feels like you're actually doing something. And I think he wants people to feel like they're actually doing something while doing not that much.
And I also think he has devalued everything. Nothing has value.
Right.
Words don't have value. Facts don't have value. Information or perceptions of things don't have value. The only thing that has value is what he says at any given moment.
Right.
His followers. It's just...
It's really hard with kids. And it's interesting, going back to your story about bullying. I have... My kids have cousins who have a little trouble in school. When the election happened, one of them was crying, was like, am I going to get bullied more? Because this guy is. And a lot of teachers mm-hmm. at conferences have talked about how, and it's the most embarrassing statement in, I think, my life, how do you explain to a child that just because the president is a bully...
doesn't mean that it's okay to be a bully.
Yeah. Which is still not cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? My therapist has actually forbidden me. He's like, you have to stay off Twitter and Facebook. It's hurting yeah. you and it's hard.
Three of the most important people in my life have told me to stop doing it on Twitter. You have, my wife, and Wayne from the Flaming Lips have all told me, stop doing that.
Yeah, you were a jerk. Well, you were just going dark. You were going.
But that's
down.
What I was saying before. I'm frustrated because I don't know how to. What's my angle on this thing? You know,
yeah.
Patton Oswalt's kind of funny. Mm. You know, different people do different things. You know,
I know there's I know a guy who's been doing some really funny things with. He started trolling Richard Spencer guy, who I didn't know
yeah.
who or what he was and shouldn't care anyway.
Yeah.
But he would just say things like, I hope you get stuck in a long line at the grocery store.
Yeah.
And just kept things like that. And he was like, it's a little thing. It's innocuous. It makes me feel better. And dude responded. He was like, you're kind of a low-level troll. And I think he responded, you're kind of a low-level human or something like that. You know, just a little kind of – but just dumb little things like that. The Twitter – idea of ringing the doorbell and running. Some about it.
I can't see. That's the problem. And that's where Twitter is a horrible place. If I did that in a Richard Spencer thread with the last name Horowitz, see what the fuck happens on Twitter.
This is real. This is a Rosenberg.
It's some nasty shit, man. Like, I was opened up to the Twitter world on a Hillary Clinton thread. And some guy, she wrote like Happy Ramadan on it. Some guy posted a picture of like a ton of pork. And wrote, yeah, have a happy Ramadan. And I just write to this guy, classy. That's all I wrote.
That's all you wrote.
Classy. I wrote. Yeah. Floodgates.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, within 15 minutes, I was called a kike. I was told to go back to Israel. Like, what the fuck do I know about Israel anyway? Like, or have anything to do with it? And all this
shit.
You
didn't do your birthright.
Dude, it's
no
a bummer.
Come
dude.
On, Benny.
Barely went to college. I don't know about any of this stuff, man. Not to mention my family was well in America before Israel was even a thought. So, like, I don't even know what to say to this stuff, but, like...
Don't give the egg avatar their
due,
man.
But that's the problem with Twitter. Those people scared me out of talking. Not because I'm scared of these actual people, because I don't want to fucking hear that from somebody I don't know. Hmm. You know what I mean? I don't want to be opened up to something like that, even though... I do want to use my voice.
Dude, that's what happens when comment boards become mainstream. You know what I mean?
Oh, God, I saw a guy comment about Obama saying that Obama played the race card the first day he wouldn't release his birth certificate. I was just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, see, that's where you got to not pay attention.
My blood pressure just went through the roof.
It's just everybody's drunk uncle learned how to type with their thumbs, and that's the hard thing to shake off. You know what I mean? And I was... I grew up with, I spent a lot of time in the Midwest. My dad was in the military. So, like, I grew up with, like, lieutenant, colonel in the Army, NRA, the proudest PBS supporter you'd ever meet in your life. My dad carrying his tote bag from the local place, donated everything. And it's like, well, that's the kind of person that's where you go, your arguments are valid. You have to separate it from the crazy.
I had a question for Stephen Burns.
Thank you, Jonah.
No, let's switch gears, man.
Yeah,
no
man.
Rush and no more Trump. Just move on.
What is it like, sort of, obviously you guys have collaborated a long time, you're really close friends, but what's it like being in a band with someone who has made your favorite record? I mean, that to me must be surreal. Was it hard to get used to? Was it natural?
Caress him. it's interesting because it's a little daunting sometimes because, you know, when we were recording the kids record, like, I can't keep up, you know? It's like, I literally can't keep up. It's like, okay, we're going to do this huge David Bowie meets, you know, I'll say those things. Like, it's got to be like Ben-Hur and David Bowie, but with the Wizard of Oz backing vocals. And Steven's like halfway done with that an hour and a half later, and I've got three lines written. You know what I mean? So he is an extraordinary guy. Like, I think other musicians would certainly back that up. Like, he's a rare bird. So it's hard to work with sometimes, but it's like so fun. I mean, like, this is the guy who's written all my favorite music. And I, of all the things Steven does, I love it when he plays the drums. Like, I just, that's the one. That's what gets me. Because he just looks so weird when he does it. Because he's got, yeah. Like, he's just got this, like, really intense thing, you know. And the drum sounds on the Soft Bulletin are kind of what blew my mind first. And then to see, like, the actual keyboard that made the cool string sound. And all like that. That's cool. But the way we work together on the kids thing is, like, I don't touch any instruments. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have time for me to do...
Except for the Omnichord.
Right. Like, just the way we work, I probably, in theory, could play one or two of the parts that happened, maybe. But it would take 2 days for me to do it. You know? Yeah. So... he just plays everything, so it's just kind of like watching a movie.
I think we figured out quickly that if I do that and don't worry about exactly what you're going to write lyrically, and you don't worry exactly about exactly what I'm going to do musically, then you can excel at what you do, and I can try to quickly create the foundation for it. And they just kind of help each other along. You know?
Yeah, when we did my solo record, which I think only my mother bought, you know, that was different because I was coming to Steven with songs and all these tracks that I had done at home.
Right.
And that was, in a way, like, as a fanboy, like, that was even cooler because Steven would be like, well, no, I thought we'd keep that. No, I like that part. And I'd be like, oh, really?
So you're going to be full on frontman mode when you guys play out?
Sort of.
He's the frontman, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
but with guitar, behind the guitar.
He's trying to drag me into the shenanigans, but I'm mostly just playing music. So.
Yeah, I would rather. I mean, my ideal thing is that we were both kind of singing, like frontmen, you know, kind of thing. But I think it's cool for kids, though, to see one guy who's kind of a conventional ringleader. And then this other dude who is surrounded by instruments that he can play every single one.
Yeah, we're going to try and make that part of the thing that I'm playing this instrument on this song. And, you know,
Are there any visual ideas? I mean, it seems from the video and there's a lot of aesthetic.
Lots of visuals.
No, not really. Not anymore. So we're just going to, there are, I mean, like we're going to try to see what works. But, you know...
No laundry machines going in and out.
No, we're not. That still pisses me off.
But, you know, I mean...
they did that. Like, why?
I think if we had 2 months to really work up a show, I think we could... I think we've got some really strong ideas for a multimedia thing. But I don't know that this will be the show where we have the time to really implement them. But we'll see what works, and we're going to try some cool stuff. We're going to try some cool stuff.
Is it anyone else you hired guns with you, or you just run around playing everything?
Well, I have a lot of the music is just tracks from the original recordings, and I just play on top of them.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just me playing music and him singing, and I back him up with the vocals on certain songs, and we're still figuring it out. We have till 1 o'clock on Sunday to figure out this show.
So. Yeah. I mean, there's ideas. Like, you know, I wanted to do some live chroma key stuff. You know what I mean? And because I've never seen that in a kid show before. And it's also the world I come from. You know, I can't, you know, there'll probably be sock puppetry or something. You know what I mean? Like, gotta do something.
Yeah.
What do you think the audience will be like? Do you have any ideas or is it kind of...
It's a good question. Parents and kids.
Yeah.
You know, we deliberately didn't aim this album at any age group, so we don't really know, but we'll see. But I just imagine...
Who's putting it out?
We are.
Just straight up?
Yeah.
Good for you. Yeah. Like tangible or just out there and...
Physical copy.
Physical copy?
Yeah. You can buy a physical copy. Yeah. I would urge you to buy a physical copy. That would be great. No, we had... I shouldn't get into it, but we had like six labels turn us down for either it wasn't kid-centric enough, or it was not, you know, we just had... We heard every excuse for not wanting to put the
record. But they were all interested. You know, they were all like, this is something interesting. What is it? You know, so there's always like this little flurry.
And those people can all go to hell now.
Yeah.
You know.
They're all scared to market something they don't know how to market.
Yeah, but they were all like, this is different. What is happening?
Exactly. Yeah. It's just
we need to have this? I can't
brain
tell.
Overload. Don't know what to do.
We're already being encouraged because the Unicorn and Princess Rainbow song was, what, number 3 on...
It's good, serious, yeah.
Good zone, serious nice. Station. So
it's great.
Went from like 13 to 3 in a couple of weeks. So whatever that means, it's something. It's encouraging.
Dude, kids go for that stuff. Yeah. You can like in DC, you can go visit and talk to the DJ, you know, where the series where they play all that stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, really?
I know a parent who just did that. She just emailed and it's like, hey, my kids want to come by. They love your show. And that's where all this stuff gets played, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the biggest story about kids' stuff is They Might Be Giants, you know, when they made that switch years and years ago. That's how most of my friends' kids got into music was through that.
And they do a good job.
That's great. It's super
cool. I'm a big fan, actually.
Yeah, it's
like,
so
I'm
good.
A really big fan. And,
are you guys planning on doing a lot more touring or wait and see what happens?
I think we're going to, we'll do this show on Sunday. And if it goes well, we have an Oklahoma City show that people want us to play. And we'll do that if this goes well on Sunday.
I mean, I think we'd both like to, but I don't know what the...
The lips this year are just crazy busy.
I mean,
so.
Half of my band is in a real band. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be busy.
Yeah, like, we play Sunday. I fly home that night to Oklahoma City and then fly back here on Wednesday. So.
Well, then you're just going to have to open for yourself. I mean, that's really what we're trying to get across.
What the Giants do. Which I think is really smart. Like when they're playing a festival gig, their sound check is basically their kid show.
Oh, no way.
Which
is a good idea.
It's actually really smart.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, do you just continue, you know, when he goes on tour and you guys aren't actively working, do you continue to work on music independently?
No. You know, I mean, it hasn't really been like that. I mean, I'm a musician as much as I'm anything else. You know, I'm always noodling around.
Sure.
Like I've always got music that I write, you know, but... I don't have like a hard drive full of kid songs, but I do have a bunch of ideas. So, and I know you do too. Like,
we have a couple of ideas
on. Yeah.
We have a Christmas song we want to try to do this next year. So,
Be cool.
I could see us doing a whole other EP if the interest is there. So,
yeah. There's a character on the record where we just did a piece of radio theater because I've always wanted to do that with like Foley effects and stuff. And
Rick the Giant,
and like it's as though he and I are in the recording studio. We're trying to write a song, and we're trying to play the drums and make them sound ginormous, but it just sounds like crap.
Yeah.
And then there's a knock on the door. It's like, hey guys, how you doing? You know, and it's like, and he's like, oh, it's Rick the Giant
from next door. Yeah.
Cool, you know. And Rick the Giant comes over and destroys the drum set or whatever.
He offers to play drums with us.
Yeah.
We're like, you play the drums? Cool. That's cool.
But it was really fun to do. And we did it just like, you know, we just kind of
the drums go from like nothing to full on distortion reverb trail. God,
slow nerve action drums.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we're very fond of Rick the Giant. Just from making it, we just thought it'd be hilarious to do like a David Bowie, Bing Crosby kind of holiday album, you know,
with Rick the Giant.
Rick the Giant.
I love that.
You do the ginormous drummer boy, and just, you know.
Is Rick the Giant the inspiration for you playing that tiny little drum set in the video?
That's me playing the tiny little drum
set.
That's you in the tiny kit?
Yeah,
That's him working that out for the show on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, really? I was kind of thinking that we'd do that with just like a couple of dolls, and I would come in, hey guys!
Yeah. No. That'd be awesome. That'd be hilarious.
There's going to be a visual element to the show. So.
But we'll see if any of that works. We don't know if that's going to work. Hopefully it will.
I think file under shenanigans is what I would say,
Shenanigans.
That'd be a great
hijinks
record,
shenanigans,
record name the next record.
Shenanigans.
File under shenanigans.
Live at shenanigans. No. File under shenanigans.
All right.
Oh, good.
I want to point out that 4 Stevens in this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
It was Steve Burns, Steve Drozd, Steven Smith, and Steve Grawalski at Pulse Music who engineered this sesh.
Right. Keeps quiet.
He keeps quiet, although
we need to give him
keep
chime
listening,
in.
And you may hear Stephen Grawalski chime in a little more in the future. I can sometimes tell the future.
You can?
Yeah. I can. But yeah, definitely. So check out those Sam Am shows in June. June 9th in Garward, New Jersey. June 10th in Croydon, PA. That one's free. Check them out in Europe in July. And if you want to support this podcast, please visit goingofftrack.com. You can donate, or you can donate via Venmo at Offtrack. That'll send the money straight to Brad's account. I don't know why.
Thank you.
I don't know why he set it up that way, but I don't know another way to set it up. and Brad is a very trustworthy guy.
Yeah, I'm buying lotto tickets. One of them will pay off, man.
Yeah, I'll save the story for another one. I was going to tell an embarrassing dating story from
oh, really?
Last night. Yeah, and I know you love hearing
that. Gotta tell it at the beginning, man.
I'll tell it at the beginning of
next week.
Tune in next week for a very embarrassing dating story by me. In the meantime, yeah, if you can't afford to donate, that's cool. Leave us a review on iTunes. Tweet at us at Going Off Track. Tell your friends about the podcast. We're back with another great one next week. Thanks to Pulse Music. Thanks to Steven. Thanks to our publicist, Maggie, for setting it up. And we'll be back next week. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.